All lines are now bridged.
Great. Thank you very much. Good morning, everyone. I'm Mike Berry. I'm with ONC's Office of Policy, and we are kicking off our next USCDI Task Force. We really appreciate everyone joining today and for your time, and especially for our task force members who put in a lot of time doing their homework that Stephen assigns to them. So we really appreciate that. We're going to get started here in a minute. I just need to take roll call for the record, and then I'll turn it over to Stephen Lane in just a minute. And I'll start with Stephen. Are you present?
I am here with Bells on.
Great. Ricky Bloomfield. Hans Budenteich.
Present.
Grace Cordovano.
Here.
Leslie Kelly Hall.
I'm here, thank you.
Jim Gerges. Ken Kawamoto. Clem McDonald. Aaron Neary.
Good morning.
Brett Oliver. Mark Savage.
Good morning, here.
Michelle Schreiber. Sasha Termott.
Good morning.
Andy Truscott. Cheryl
Turney. Michelle Schreiber, I had just joined.
Great, thank you. Cheryl Turney. Dan Breeman.
Good morning.
And Denise Webb.
Good morning, I'm on.
Okay,
hi, I didn't
all.
Hear my name called out. This is Les Leonard.
Thank you, Les. All right, thank you. And I'll turn it over to Stephen.
Thank you so much. We've got an echo. Let me try to resolve the echo. Am I echoing now? No.
Yeah.
Good. All right. Excellent. So thank you all for joining us this morning. I apologize that my camera is not allowing you to see my pretty face, but hopefully you can hear me fine. And welcome everyone to the February 23rd meeting of our USCDI Task Force. Really appreciate the effort that people are putting in to show up and to offer their input and work on the homework. I know a number of you have put a lot of thought in this week, and we want to have a chance to bring those issues forward. I spent a fair bit of time last night with our spreadsheet trying to kind of collect the information that people have shared and suggestions that have been made during the course of our meetings to date. And I know a number of you have had a chance to go in and provide comments. I'm hoping that our Excel team will have the opportunity to bring up the spreadsheet for our review today when we get to that point, so that we can just kind of level set a bit and see how we're trying to capture some of the input that people provided. The meeting notes, Mike and Al, my understanding is that we have posted the notes from the first meeting and only the first meeting to the website, and that we're still working on notes for the subsequent meetings. Is that true?
Yeah, we've got the notes from the ninth, the second meeting, will be posted imminently, and then we're working on the meeting number three as well.
Perfect. And then, can you clarify whether the task force website has been updated yet? I actually haven't looked in the last 24 hours.
I'm not sure. I think that's I'll have to look.
And Stephen, yes. Al, they're putting the finishing touches on the website. They're running a little behind schedule, more so than usual. But our understanding is that it will be up. It's imminent, hopefully this week.
Perfect. So I think just for the benefit of those of you who have volunteered and are spending your time, we have fallen a little bit behind in terms of updating the public website with the members and the charges of our new task force. I personally apologize for that. I was hoping we would get that done much sooner than this. To find the meetings of our task force, and the publicly posted notes, presentations, et cetera, I've found that if you go to the HITAC calendar, the individual meetings are listed there. And when you click into the meetings from the calendar, you can find the content. So that's where you'll find the posted content for today's meeting, the presentation and the agenda. And if you go back and you look at the first meeting, you see there's quite a nice collection there. There are the transcription, the recording, and the formal notes that have been reviewed and approved. So that's where you're going to find all those. And then once we have our website up and running with all of your names and lights, you'll be able to access and share that as needed. Anything else, Mike or Al, regarding the past meeting notes you wanted to mention?
Everyone is welcome to review them. Especially if you have missed the meeting, to just refresh your memory, along with reviewing the task force, the tracker. As needed, feel free to review those as they become available.
And we appreciate that not everyone is going to be able to make every meeting. So we have worked with the Excel team to be able to get the raw transcript out to all of you as soon as that's completed, which should be within hours of our meeting being done. And then that will be, I believe, distributed to you through the email as opposed to posted to the website. And then they do clean up the transcript. And it's the edited or clean transcript that is going to be posted publicly. But again, for those of you who have to miss a meeting, want to understand what happened, where we stand with prepping for homework, et cetera, the raw transcript should be made available to you. All right. So let's move on and review our charge once again. Perfect. So as you will recall that we've looked at this slide many times. We're now in the latter half of February. So the clock is ticking on our initial deliverables, which will be due in mid-April. Realistically, we probably have to finish up our work on that by the end of March so that we can prepare a final draft of a report to present to the HITAC by mid-April. But again, our overarching charge to review and make recommendations regarding the published draft USCDI version 2 and the process that ONC has developed to produce these draft and final versions. And then specifically here over the rest of February and March, we're focusing in on commentary on the data classes and elements that were originally and are published in USCDI version 1, including applicable standards, new data classes and elements that were proposed to be added in draft version 2, including the standards applicable to those, and then the elements that were suggested by the public that were put in level 2 as potentially technically ready to include in the version 2, but that perhaps were not included. So that's been our focus to date, reminding you again that after April, we will be shifting our focus to the expansion process to provide recommendations about the tools, the on-deck submission system that are being used to collect suggestions of the evaluation criteria and processes used to assign suggested data elements and classes to a level. And then the prioritization process that's used to select the individual data classes and elements to be included in the subsequent draft. And remembering that we will not necessarily see ONC utilizing the exact same prioritization process as they put together draft version 3 over the coming annual cycle as they did working on version 2, of course, this last cycle being largely informed by our society's experience with the pandemic. So those are our charges. I know a number of you sort of wish that we were asked to do other things, that there were opportunities to really blow up draft version 2 and put in things that we all feel strongly about and that will have value in time. Do people have any comments regarding the charges or questions?
Steve, this is Mark. Can I throw out a comment?
Please.
So this is just in doing the homework last night, this goes to what we are looking at is level 2, and I understand that's the charge. But in doing the homework, I had cause to go back and look at the initial report that ONC listed on USCDI in January of 2018. And it got me thinking about what it means to be looking at level 2 data classes and having that be the universe of what we're considering. So there were things back in 2018 that ONC had listed that it thought would be version 2 for 2019 that aren't on the list of level 2. And it got me to realizing that level 2 is really, as you said earlier, is really just a function of what was submitted. There may be things out there that should be level 2. But if they weren't submitted, they're not on our list at the moment. And I regret that. Maybe we need to accept it, but I regret that. So, for example, cognitive status was on ONC's version 2 for 2019, but it's not, at least I didn't spot it in the list and didn't see that anybody had submitted it up on the website. Another example would be reason for hospitalization, which ONC had listed for version 2, 2019, but not part of our consideration today, not submitted, so therefore not possible to be level 2. And I just want to point that out to see if it raises any thoughts about things for either for us or for ONC. The other thing I was reminded about when I looked at that report in 2018, is that ONC said that almost all of the elements that were listed there already had technical standards as of 2018, so either fire and CCDA standards. So, again, perhaps good to consider. Thank you.
Thank you, Mark. And I think those, you know, are very relevant comments, especially for task force members that perhaps have joined this process recently, specifically acknowledging the fact that the public was given the impression that certain data elements were going to be added within a certain time frame, and that's not how this seems to have gone so far. And I think we're all aware of the opportunity to expand USCDI more broadly, perhaps more quickly. And I think we all have great aspirations for the version 3 submission cycle. And I hope that all of you who have an interest will be able to stay engaged as that we continue through the life cycle of this process. But thanks for those thoughts, Mark. You were pointing to a specific document that I believe is still posted on the public website, Mark. And if you've got that URL handy, you might just drop it in the public chat so that people all have access to the document that you were referencing.
Stephen, this is Al. If I could jump in. The document he was referencing was published prior to our proposed rule, and it was meant to get people thinking about what we had in mind for USCDI. It was not meant to be a proposed document or a proposed standard at the time, and it is only really what was in the NPRM and then in the final rule that is what, you know, should be considered as far as the expectations go. I know it's a little confusing that we have that document that's called Draft USCDI, but it should not be considered. It was never considered the proposed rule. It was an idea about where we thought things would be going.
Thanks, Al. I think that is very helpful. And again, I mean, all of you have now been, you know, employed in the sausage factory, and we're all going to make the best meal that we possibly can. Thank you, Mark, for posting that document. I think it's a good reference. All right. We've had a number of people join us since we took roll. Thank you. Some of those are noted in the public comments. And I'm trying to keep up with all of this. All right. The next thing is, so you're stuck with me as the chair for now. There is a plan to engage another co-chair, and we are in process, I believe, having a discussion presently with ONC about how that is going to go. There is, I think, within the FACA infrastructure, the desire for co-chairs to be members of the HITAC, and we had put out a call to all of you who are HITAC members to see whether you had an interest in serving in that role. So we've gotten the feedback that we have, both from HITAC members and non-members, and I think ONC is just in the process of making a final determination. So we'd hoped to have that clarified today, and it doesn't seem to be the case, so we're going to go ahead, and you're stuck with me for now. Next up is the tracker that we have put up. I'm hoping that all HITAC members have had a chance to share your contact information with the team and have been able to achieve access to the recommendations tracker. Do we have anybody from Excel who can say what proportion of our task force members have been able to get access?
This is Katie. I think we have all but two or three.
That's wonderful. Okay. Well, the two or three of you who have not yet shared your appropriate email for accessing a Google Doc, please do that at your earliest convenience. The rest of you, please exercise your access rights and get in there and take a look. I know some people have had a chance to do that and have placed comments. Al, do you want to bring up the document and sort of make some commentary? I know you sort of seeded the document with the initial content, and then I've added more. And we do have some comments from Hans, I think, are the only comments that I can see on there so far.
I'm sharing it. Okay, you see it?
Yep. And I see a number of you are actually in the document as we speak, which is, I think, just the right way to do this. So, Al, do you want to walk us through how you constructed the columns and what your thoughts are on that?
So we've got these broken down into roughly correlating to the tasks that the task force has been charged with. It includes the date the recommendation was made, or whether it's in the meeting or outside the meeting, whether the comment corresponds to which particular charge number. So with the first item on the list is Leslie Kelly Hall's submission that references the process. This is task number three for the task force.
Yeah, excuse me. Is it possible for you to zoom in a little bit? It's really difficult to see.
I will zoom in. Let me see. I'm trying. Hang on. How's that?
Much
yes,
better.
That's great.
Thank you.
Sure. So the first comment is a comment from Leslie Kelly Hall, who represents consumers. So this is column D. This is sort of rough and not necessarily required, but we just want to get a perspective. What is the perspective from the commenter? Is the data element from version one? So something that was in USCDI version one and carried forward. Is it a new data element that's in draft V2, or is it one of the level two data elements? And that roughly corresponds to the task charge number. We're currently in task one, but this comment was made about the process. So the question is a comment about a particular data class or and a data element? And then what is the comment in particular? And I'm trying to scroll because I can't see my scroll bar. So this is the specific recommendation and the justification for the recommendation. Not a lot of form requirements for these recommendations. And then these are the specific recommendations that we're going to look at as a task force and finalize if we accept that as a recommendation from the task force. We will, we'll make that an official recommendation like we have had in the past with a number of, I think we had 20-something recommendations or maybe more than that the last go-around for USCDI version 1. So whatever our final decision will be either be copied from the member recommendation into this as a final recommendation if it's accepted. And so that's the way this is laid out. And so right now we have only the task force members don't currently have edit capability. They only have comment capability, and the workaround that Leslie Kelly Hall has figured out is she submitted to us a spreadsheet of several comments, several recommendations that we were able to paste in. And that's how we've got it set up. Any questions about that?
Just to be clear, Leslie did submit a spreadsheet. I believe that was yesterday with a good maybe 8 or 10 lines of suggestions. Those have not yet been incorporated here, I don't believe. No. And I think we do need to figure out how we're going to populate this. So far, we've been populating it with suggestions that have come up in the discussion here that have been made part of the public record. And Al and I and Mike have not had a chance to sort of think that through. This issue of whether people are given edit access or comment access is really just a matter of trying to keep this from going completely off the rails and out of control, and based on some good experience that we had in prior task forces. So our goal is to take input that comes in discussion here at the task force, to take other input that potentially people submit independently. There's always the question of input that comes in through the public chat during the meetings, as well as issues that are posted directly on the website by task force members. So there's a lot of avenues to put in, and then our challenge is to kind of keep that going. But as Al said, the goal of this is to really come up with a set of very specific recommendations that we will include in our report back to the HITAC. And I was just reminded by Al, I think, that we are expected to make an interim set of recommendations to HITAC in March, so actually within the next month. So we do need to kind of keep clipping along at this to pull together the key recommendations. I think we have to remember, of course, that our task force process is going on in parallel with the public comment process. which some of you are contributing to, and I think many of us through our networks have informed others in the public space about this process and invited other people to go in and make comments about specific data classes and elements. So I think there's a lot of ways in which our task force is, I think, catalyzing discussion and comment coming into ONC. So our impact will not only be in our report directly to HITECH, but also in how we're impacting the industry more broadly. So questions about the tracker. Let's start with sort of form and access questions, and then we can jump into the content a bit.
Stephen, this is Hans. I have one question, and it's a process question.
Yes.
And that is the last week, Ricky and I were asked for some follow-up. As we do that collaboration-wise, is then the intent that we put that in here? Is there another place? How do we collaborate that? So we collaborate offline, and then we drop it in here, that just trying to figure out where what goes in that regard.
Yeah, I think at this point, probably the best that we could offer, since the spreadsheet doesn't really lend itself to, you know, insertion of large volumes of comments, I would say that probably the best would be to just submit that to the task force leads, and then we will hopefully figure out how to bring it up on camera to share it with the group as a whole. Does that sound right, Al?
I think so. As well, you know, and we'll see if that works. If it works, great. If it doesn't, we'll come up with a different plan.
And did you want to say anything else about the assignment that you guys received?
No, I cannot say anything more because we have not delved in yet. At least I have not, and I'm reaching out to Ricky to see where he's at.
Totally fair. We understand that this is midnight oil work. So that's great. Thank you. All right. Leslie, if I can put you on the spot, again, you dug deep into this and made an effort to put together some ideas and suggestions. Do you want to talk about your process and how you approached that to inform others' work? We lost you on camera. Hopefully.
Are you there now?
There you are. Yep.
Okay. Sorry about that. So, just from terms of process, what I did was download the spreadsheet, so it was the same format, and then I took each of the areas of concern that I had by going into the website, selecting each of the particular elements, and then noting which level they were in and what suggestions that I might have. I had some global suggestions, kind of like what Clem recommended, and that's the less of a piecemeal approach to some of our high volume categories, for instance, and more of an approach that said, why not everything about physician demographics and patient demographics, for instance. And then I had some very specific comments about elements moving to USCDI that support the COVID vaccination efforts that will be needed and some other consumer-centric items. And then I sent the spreadsheet to Al and Stephen, and unfortunately a little too late to be included. But I did not use the comment feature on the spreadsheet because I needed to add versus just comment on existing items. Is that what you had in mind for me to comment on, Stephen?
Yeah, that's great, Leslie, and I really appreciate that. I know Al had proposed that if people had elements that they wanted to add to the spreadsheet, that one approach would be to just kind of take a blank line at the bottom and sort of make comments on each of the cells as a way to sort of introduce what you would propose going into the cells. That does seem a little kludgy, so I can see why you took the approach that you did. But I think that might be one way to do it, and then that would make it relatively straightforward for the co-chairs and the staff to just sort of copy things from the comments and paste them into the cells themselves. So I don't know if you would be willing to do that. It would probably take you a good 15 minutes based on the work that you've already done. Al, go ahead.
So I was just going to say, I think Kelly, Leslie, correct me if I'm wrong. You said that you couldn't comment on a blank spot, a blank cell. Is that right?
Well, if I comment on a blank cell, there's very hard to know that it's there. All you see is that little teeny triangle, right? And
yeah.
So you don't know how it's relative to anything else. So then I couldn't really go back and edit and see the context of anything else unless I looked at every single cell comment.
Yeah,
so that's
and
I think that
having, because you put all that information in all of the cells or all of the columns, being able to copy that into the table would be really difficult to extract it out of a comment, which has no format, into the column. So perhaps if we have maybe just a note that says there's an attachment, with a set of comments, I'm just throwing this out as an idea, might be a better way to go so that we keep all of the columns in format so we don't mess up when we transcribe it.
Can I make a suggestion, please? Can we add...
Yeah, go ahead, Chris.
Would the group be open to adding a second tab which would give us, in general, the task force members the ability to populate, and tab one could be what is approved to be moved over. This way we keep it structured. There's transparency on all comments. We could see if there's patterns on multiple members of the task force commenting in specific realms. So is that an opportunity so every individual person doesn't have to download and then email and then create more work? Would that be a more streamlined approach potentially?
So Grace, I'm not sure it's possible to have different controls on different tabs within a Google Doc. It's an interesting question. I did just, let me see, Al, do you still have, yeah. So you can see there on line 21, I did put a test comment on a blank cell initially, and then I was able to copy that comment and then paste it into the cell itself. So that actually worked okay for me given my access. So I think that, again, your initial proposal that people comment on blank cells, sort of to take ownership of the cell, if you will, and then fill in the cells across the column, I still think that may work. And perhaps, Leslie, you can try that for, the first few lines in your spreadsheet, and we can see how that goes. The other thing, and again, I want to, again, thank Hans for taking the time to go in and comment on a couple of the cells in rows 15 and 16. I think that we can actually get a pretty lively discussion going within the comments attached to each of the cells, and I would invite others to hop in there and do that. I think one of the things that we want to avoid, and one of the reasons that we, I believe that ONC decided not to open this up, is that we'd like to identify individual data classes, data elements that we're discussing, and then keep that conversation kind of in one place so that we don't end up having 2 or 3 or 10 lines that are all addressing the same data element with different people's thoughts about it. We want to try to keep it together. So please do exercise your comment capabilities and let's see how we can make that work here over the coming week. Does that seem fair?
Yep. And Stephen, with the Google Docs open, I just wanted to see if you're noticing the raised hand feature.
They're there. Yes. Okay. Let's do that. Thank you so much, Mike. Clem, you put your hand up first.
Thank you. Let's see. Sorry, I can't. Sorry, I couldn't unmute. So I'm kind of puzzled. we thought we were supposed to submit. So I submitted a page of comments or two, a couple pages to you. Then I thought we were instructed to put them in the ISA comment area. And now I think it's, I mean, we got to get crisp marching orders. Tell us, just do it one way, but let us know which it is. Because, you know, I feel like I'm running on a treadmill a little bit.
Which way
to do it? Should it all be in a spreadsheet only?
I really appreciate that. And I think we are kind of finding our stride and finding our processes here. I guess I'll ask Mike and Al to comment. I think we did, you know, Terry and I initially kind of did an outreach and encouraged people to just send us comments. Then we learned that that wasn't going to be enough. They needed to be entered into the public record. So ONC suggested we have people put them in as comments on the ISA website. And then we came up with this idea of the spreadsheet. So your confusion is very well placed, given that we have been evolving our processes along the way. I think at this point, as we're thinking about how to collect what will end up being the task force's suggestions, formal suggestions back to ONC, I think we do want to use the spreadsheet methodology. So, and I know that you and your staff, you know, did some work putting together the document, and then I believe, I'm not sure actually whether or not you got it posted to the ISA or not. But I think that for individual items, and I did put your name, I think, on at least one of these that I captured notes. So I think at this point we would like you to add color commentary into the spreadsheet. And again, and we may well evolve our process further, you know, similarly to what Grace suggested.
This is a learning phase, but I think the spreadsheet's going to be too granular. I mean, I you know, unless you have staff that's going to organize it, I don't know how you're going to, I mean, it's going to be hard. I mean, the idea of having bigger subjects and more broad covering things multiply, it might be more functional. I don't know what other people think.
Well, I think you're right. Go ahead, Mark.
Is that for me, Steve? Steven?
I don't know. Somebody said I agree. I just wanted to give
that
them
was Les. Life. Yeah, I agree with Clem.
Oh, sorry, Les.
I always agree with Clem. Anyway.
But Stephen, while I've misunderstood, I did put a comment in the chat. Is the spreadsheet now the public record of our comments in place of the ISA? And Grace's thought back was maybe not. It's just the task force. So perhaps you can clarify along the lines of Clem's comment about what we're trying to do now.
Al or Mike, do you want to take a stab?
I think that, first of all, I think that we should discuss this at our debrief. It's a major issue, and I see everybody's points about the confusion and sometimes the duplication of effort or the efficiency of doing this work or making these comments. I don't, an immediate obvious solution doesn't jump out at me right now as I think about this, but your points have been well taken. We want to be able to capture comments and specific recommendations because we specifically wanted to capture recommendations because the product of this task force will be recommendations back to ONC. And so that's why we've tried to focus on that. Now, some comments can be converted into specific recommendations. You know, Clem, your comments have all pointed to several specific recommendations that we will, you know, take into account. And we have to figure out a way to convert the comments that were inserted into the ISA into recommendations for consideration for the task force. I don't think we have the right answer yet.
Well, if I could come back to sort of a more mega approach, you know, say if we take, I don't know, it was Encounter. If these are already required by ONC to be implemented under FHIR and perhaps under CDA, why take them one piece at a time and spend so much time? I mean, because it's kind of already bought the requirement. And then we could spend an awful lot of time looking at the granular level. It's already specified and defined and probably in use.
Yeah, and Clem, I think you make a good point, and I think it kind of goes to what Mark was saying earlier, that there are many data elements that have standards that are well-defined, you know, as we were hearing from others, you know, that are already used in other federal programs, such as the electronic quality, clinical quality measures. And yet, you know, what seems to be the case is that ONC is being much more conservative with the advancement of USCDI, really seeing it as a tool that is going to raise the floor for all certified health IT systems and for many different user communities. So I think they are, as we've said, taking kind of a slow approach initially, while many of us, I think, are here on the task force, could imagine seeing a much more rapid cycle approach. We're not going to solve that here today, so I think it's good that we continue to discuss that, and I think we want to make the most of our time together to try to move things forward with the tasks that we've been given, and anticipate that ONC will give us more guidance going forward. Okay, and Hans, thank you for your comment the value of the spreadsheet for capturing kind of dialogue in a way that you really can't in the ISA comments. I think that's really true. Okay, and good. So I would like us to move on and try to return to the task at hand. So that would be let's go on to back to our slides and let's hop to slide. Well, let's go to slide 5. We'll just work our way through the slides. This is the reminder of the scope of USCDI V2 with the new items starred. This is where we've been spending our time.
Even can I interrupt for just a second? I'm
sure.
Sorry.
Go ahead,
Al. I seem to have lost the ability to return back to the main screen and unshare or stop sharing my screen.
So you are no longer sharing.
Okay, thank you for kicking me out.
That
serves me well.
Yeah, they're back on the slides. Yeah, when this happened to me before, Al, that's why I didn't want to share my screen during the meeting. I had to actually drop out of Adobe and come back in to get things to work again.
Yeah. And that's what I'm looking at doing right now. I'm still
Steven,
on the phone, but I'm going to drop and come back on.
Steven,
okay.
Sorry to interrupt. I just want to let you know that Cheryl's attorney's hand's been up in case you're not seeing
it.
Ah,
yes, indeed. Good. I'm seeing it. I'm just not tracking everything. That's why I need a co-chair. Cheryl, go ahead.
It's okay. My hand, question was addressed, and I'll put my hand down, but that's all right. Yeah, I've had it raised for like 10 minutes, so it's fine.
Okay. I should not be hired as an air traffic controller, let me tell you. Okay, so let's go on to the next slide to remind ourselves where we are in our process. We have been looking at the new data classes and elements that were added in draft USCDI version 2. And we've actually made some real progress, I'm happy to say, on this task. And that is what we want to continue on today, acknowledging as we have the challenges of getting input into the process and collecting our recommendations. But I do have a degree of confidence that this is all going to work out. We're going to put together a report for HITECH, and it's going to make sense, and it's going to reflect our thinking. So let's carry on. I don't see any hands, but Mike, do holler at me if I miss out here. So on the next slide, we are reminded again of the new data classes and elements that were added in draft version 2. We have done a pretty good job discussing, I think, care team members, diagnostic imaging, and the encounter information, which we spent a fair bit of time on at our last meeting. Did people have any new ideas or specific comments they wanted to make about those three data classes that you think we have not captured in our tracker or that need some additional discussion at this point.
Stephen, this is Hans.
Yes, go ahead, Hans.
And that is related to Encounter. And after the meeting, doing some follow-up further, and I think there's still some discussions open that we may not address today, but when you look at what FHIR is currently focusing on in Encounter is not actually diagnosis, but is the reason. And in the condition, it is supporting the Encounter diagnosis. So I think there's still a little bit more work to be done, and I don't have an answer or a suggestion right now, but about the relationship between Encounter diagnosis and the problem and the health concern. How much do we let the standards figure that out as to which one is referenced where and what it means in more detail? And what's really in the USCDI, what is the intent of the diagnosis, Encounter diagnosis, considering that currently that is not called out in FHIR as a area of focus. It's not that it's prohibited, but it's not called out in what everybody is looking at. So there's still a little bit of area that I want to highlight that some discussion is going on to better understand that. But I don't have a suggestion at the moment. I didn't want to give the impression that it was all closed by some in the community.
So I must say, Hans, I listened to all your words, but I don't quite get what you're saying.
Okay. There is no... go ahead. Go ahead, sorry.
I think that maybe help out. I think there's a reason for a visit, and then there's a diagnosis, and there's problems with the timing of some of these things, because the diagnosis is not necessarily set until later or afterwards. So I think it's a good question to wrestle with this a little bit more before rushing ahead. But I had also a problem with problems. And the date of diagnosis, I think, should work. I mean, that's one.
Clem, yeah. Let's hold off on problems because I wanna flesh out this Encounter issue first, okay? But we'll come back to that. So as a primary care physician who does mostly outpatient work, I think of my encounters as having diagnoses attached to them, right? They are the diagnoses that I document in the course of the visit. They're used for billing. And in the inpatient setting, an inpatient encounter has diagnoses that are attached to it that, again, are, as you say, often established after the fact, often not by the clinicians but by coders. But these encounters, be they ambulatory or inpatient, and, you know, same with ambulatory surgery, et cetera, you know, they have diagnoses attached to them. They tend to be coded in ICD, and they are the encounter-associated diagnoses. That's clearly different than a reason for visit. It's clearly different than a health concern. Though I know some EHR systems sort of on the patient-facing side call the diagnosis problem list the health list of health concerns, so it gets a little confusing. So, Hans, you said something about FHIR and diagnosis and that it wasn't called out, and that's what I was trying to understand. So can you say more about that since I'm not a FHIR expert? And if you're talking, Hans, I'm not hearing you.
Right. In FHIR US Core, which is one of the standards called out to support the USCDI, where there is more specifics around that, going back to some of the earlier discussion as well, just wanted to note that the reason is highlighted by making that must support, but the diagnosis is not. So there were some reasons and rationale there why focusing on one versus the other, that I just wanted to indicate that there is, as a result, there's still some discussion around which one is the community focusing on, and that would help to get clarity around that, what we're trying to achieve, because in problem, also supported by US Core, is where the notion of encounter diagnosis is coming up as well. So I think it would behoove us to be more clear what the intent is behind the definition is of this diagnosis. Is it the diagnosis that was made during the encounter? Are we talking about the diagnosis that are the focus of the encounter? To have a little bit more clarity around that, that can inform whether which direction that actually needs to go when you're looking at supporting it by standards. And I think that clarity on what's the intent, is it the diagnosis that was made during that encounter, or is it the diagnosis that is the focus of the encounter? Some of those elements would help to better understand that next step that UCDI is going to roll into.
Great. Hans, can I address that? Do you mind if I address that, Stephen? So, Hans, I just want to, when we look at, like, if there's an issue with the picture data element, I recommend that we go back to the submission and look at what the definition is. And if that definition is insufficient, then perhaps a recommendation could be to improve that definition. But the definition for encounter diagnosis currently, and this was submitted by CMS, is to represent the primary reason for healthcare encounter and associated diagnosis represented by a diagnosis code using either SNOMED or ICD-10. That's the current definition of encounter diagnosis. Even though, and how FHIR currently represents it is not necessarily germane, because when things are going to require some modification to U.S. Corps or to CCDA, then that's work to be done by those entities. But with respect to how FHIR could or does represent encounter diagnosis, even though it's, you're right, encounter doesn't have diagnosis, it has reason, but the condition resource has, or the condition profile for U.S. Corps, does have a category of encounter diagnosis for it. So that could be how U.S. Corps already does represent encounter diagnosis. But how U.S. Corps does it is not as germane to this discussion as whether or not the data element as proposed is appropriate, accurate, sufficient.
I appreciate that feedback, and just to make sure is that as we go through, is that it needs to stem indeed from a clear USCDI. So I appreciate the comment that you made, and that the reason why I was raising it was that there was some question of how was it related, but you helped clarify that.
Why don't you go ahead, and then Ricky will bring you on. Yeah. Okay.
So I'm more talking about the encounter diagnosis, and I support what I think I heard Stephen saying, that we have this thing, we've had it for 40 years, we got to stick it in, we have to write it down before we leave. And I would banish all those other things from my world if I could possibly. All it's going to do is make confusion. And, you know, physicians haven't enough time finishing up the visit right now. Just, it has always been there, it will always be there, because you can't get paid if it's not there. And we shouldn't screw with it. That's sort of a message to you, Hans.
Well, that's very clear. Thank you, Clem. Ricky?
Hi, thanks. I just wanted to make a comment that the diagnosis piece of metadata here, it is included within U.S. Corps, and I think it will handle whatever we decide we want the definition to be. So I think the issue isn't as much with how FHIR represents it. It really comes down to what we want the encounter diagnosis to mean. And then whenever we come up with what we decide that means, it looks like U.S. Corps can handle it just fine. There's an option there to include diagnosis. You can include as many as you want. You can rank them. You can tie it to a condition resource. You can define what the specific use of that encounter is intended to mean, such as admission, billing, or discharge. I think all the pieces are there for us to do it. We just need to decide what we want it to mean.
And that's what I was trying to clarify as well.
Okay, great.
Okay, thank you. Hands are not up, but there has been some lively discussion in the chat. Do any task force members want to put voice to their comments? I'm thinking about you, Les, in particular.
Sure. I'll just say that I'm having trouble envisioning what the significance of and the correctness of any specific data element apart from the use cases for that element. And of course, the diversity of people we have on this call raises how important that is. Moreover, I think we all want USCDI to actually do things, you know, the day after it's implemented. So one vision of how to organize this and prioritize things might be to sort of say, well, what's our highest priority use case? What's our second highest priority use case? And then are the data elements necessary and sufficiently defined for those use cases, and what things need to be further addressed?
You know, I think that could be a useful approach. My only concern is that there are so many use cases, right? I mean, USCDI is kind of a tool that's been put out there that different rules look at, be it information blocking, be it, you know, CMS requirements on payers, et cetera. So I don't know that we can say, I mean, each of us has a perspective, you know, the patient perspective, the provider perspective, the payer perspective, et cetera. I don't know that as a task force, you know, we could necessarily come up with a prioritized list of use cases, except based on how loud each of our voices is.
Well, okay. So if we don't have that, we don't do that, then what you do is you sort of look at all of us makes comments from the perspective of our own prioritized list of task force without that being, use cases without that being transparent. And that, and I never really understand, you know, what Leslie is saying or Mark is saying because I don't really understand why they're saying what they're doing. That I just know that we have to fix everything at the same time for everybody, and that what I can tell you is that's not possible.
Valid feedback. I think one of the things that Al tried to get at as he constructed the spreadsheet was identifying the task force stakeholder group, which I think gets a little bit about, you know, what you're saying about the perspective. But I would encourage us as we go forward to capture as much as possible in our commentary, you know, what use cases we are driving at, because clearly the, you know, the need of a consumer to know what conditions were addressed during her encounter is very different than the needs of CMS to manage, you know, quality reporting or for, you know, providers to get paid. So that you're right, the use cases are critically important, and we should try to identify them wherever we can. Hey, we've got some hands up, quite a few, in fact. I'm still trying to collect ideas around care team members, diagnostic imaging, and encounter information, and then I do want to shift to problems, but getting through these five hands is going to take us a while. So, Grace, go ahead.
I'm just trying to better understand. I understand there's different stakeholders involved. There are 61 data elements. Is it possible at a high level to quickly go through and flag which stakeholder each one is applicable to get an understanding of where this draft 2 lies to benefit or with respect to use cases? Does that make sense?
Well, I think it makes sense, but I think it would be very difficult. There are a lot of stakeholders that are probably not represented here. So, I mean, we could take a swag at it. I'm not sure what value that would bring to our process. I think, you know, that USCDI is sort of a data-centric process as opposed to a stakeholder or use case-centric process. But, I mean, it clearly needs to be informed. So, curious what others think, especially the folks at ONC who might need to support such a list.
So I think that the best way to describe the content of this draft B2, so the delta between B1 and B2, is more about what are the gaps in the current USCDI. USCDI is supposed to be a patient data set. And we define the original set under version 1 And then we went back and looked at all of the submissions through the lens of looking at this patient data set. Anybody who's looked at a patient record can see where there's stuff missing, if there's stuff missing, based on what we know about what should be in the record for a given particular purpose. If it's for an inpatient for a surgery, there's certain things that you got to see. If it's for something else, there's other things that you got to see. But looking at USCDI as a general, trying to serve the majority of people, if not, certainly not going to be able to serve everybody with everything. But where are the gaps? And so the new data elements are, I think, significant gaps in USCDI version one. There were concepts and data elements that just weren't there. And so, you know, there was not provider information. There was not encounter information. There were, and there was not this diagnostic imaging data class as well. And so we're looking right now with task 1B, we're looking at for the data elements that were picked to fill some of those gaps, are they appropriate? Are they appropriately defined? Are they appropriately assigned standards? And those sorts of questions. We'll get into the, you know, what other gaps are there is more in the task 1C. But the question for these data elements are, do they fill a gap, an existing gap, and are they, and do they add enough color to the patient data set to be valuable?
Thank you, Al. Cheryl?
So I was thinking that maybe we might want to consider creating, in the spirit of transparency, what our consideration list is, or our, in terms of how we prioritize, because several people now have brought up the fact that, you know, what is it that we're going to use to evaluate the data? And I agree, it is very, very data-centric. But in the spirit of transparency, maybe we can define some criteria that we will use to evaluate what we're going to put forward and why we're going to recommend it. And I think that may be very helpful for people to understand the process we went through and how we arrived at that list that we're putting forward. And one of those items that I think has come out of at least what I've heard so far today is maybe not a stakeholder list per se, but the impact that would be it furthered or improved based on the number of stakeholders that would be positively impacted by having that data shared and part of the USCDI version 2. Because there are definitely things that we can look at that including it may be helpful to a physician or a physician that's referring someone to another physician. But there will be other items that will be helpful not only to the physician, but also to payers and to other stakeholders within the realm that may have a wider impact. And so how do you make the decision on which item is the one that we're going to recommend? I think at least some consideration should be had to that.
I think that's a great suggestion, Cheryl. Thank you for that. And I think that we can hopefully capture some of that information in comments on the spreadsheet as we go forward to capture that justification. Leslie, you had your hand up, but you dropped it. I was going to take that opportunity to announce that ONC has determined that you, Leslie, are going to get to co-chair this task force along with me. So welcome and congratulations. We're very excited to have your consumer patient-centric voice in that role. So good luck with that.
Thank you, Stephen. I appreciate the leap of faith you guys have in me. And as always, it's fun work and a great contribution. Thank you very much.
And with that, you're going to get editing rights to the spreadsheet. So watch out, everybody. So Clem, your hand is back up.
Well, I just wanted to be more positive. I've been on these committees for the whole duration, and I haven't seen the dissection down to fine-grained things, the who and what and why, it makes much difference, nor is there any feasible time. In addition, we kind of do get to agree. I mean, it's kind of you vote, all right. That's the way we do a lot of things in democracies, and I don't think there's much else we can do in the minimal amount of time we have, and thinking how slow we're going already. So I wouldn't want to slow it down more, and I'm more optimistic than some others have been.
I guess we appreciate your optimism, Clem.
Yeah,
that's
you
great.
Would be.
Also,
yeah.
Sorry? Okay. Clem, I wanted to just tell you that we're going to be giving your assistant the commenting rights on the spreadsheet to facilitate your input into the process. So that will be forthcoming.
Thank you.
All right. Dan, we haven't heard your voice yet. Go ahead.
Hi, thanks, Stephen. My comment was about the care team member item and the sort of proposed addition of care team member role from the spreadsheet. Are you ready to move to that?
Sure, please do.
Yeah, I wanted to ask, since I'm glad this is attributed to me, which is wonderful, I'd like to ask for some clarification. I realized that the current level 2 care team member role data element has a description that says a specified set of roles, locations, specialty services that a person may perform in the provision of care for a patient. And I believe that is either lifted from or directly related to a structure in FHIR called practitioner role. However, that particular structure is primarily used to associate a provider to an organization. There's a different data element, a different piece, a different structure in FHIR's representation of care team, which is, I believe, what we were talking about, basically the association of a person and their participation linked up to another person, in this case, who would be the patient. So I wanted to just get clarity, and I can make proposed refinements to that description or definition, but I wanted to get consensus from the group that what we were talking about was the linkage of whether it's a provider or a family member to a person who's the patient versus the association between a provider and the kinds of services they could provide in an organization.
Yeah, I think you make a very good point and suspect that you may have identified an opportunity here for us to refine that definition. So this is why we wanted you on this task force, because you go deep into these weeds. Why don't you formulate? we love you. Why don't you formulate a suggestion and then we can come back to that next time. Okay, Dan?
Sounds good. Yep.
Okay, we have about 15 minutes before public comments, and I would like to now dive into starting the discussion of problems, again, acknowledging that I was the person who submitted both data diagnosis and data resolution, so I'll try not to take your comments too personally. Just to be fair, those suggestions came out of work that I was doing with the California Department of Public Health, on a registry where they were trying to figure out incidence and prevalence data and realized that without these dates attached to diagnoses, there was really no way for them to do that. So that was the genesis of these suggestions. So Clem, you earlier wanted to start in on problems. Do you want to set us off?
You probably know this too, but problem lists are really a problem. I mean, there's little discipline about cleaning them, except in institutions where providers have their personal problem list, which does tend to solve it, but then that creates other problems because what's the problem list really? So I think the date of diagnosis is a no-brainer because people put it in and the computer knows when they put it in and then it's in. So almost. But, you know, we were usually flooded in my environment. We had a problem list and a dermatologist added problems. And I always had like snow flurries of problems. They all were just slightly different names for the same thing. So that's another kind of issue. And you really, you know, no one's organizing this stuff and it's a lot of labor. Now, but I think the date of diagnosis is perfect. The date of resolution is tougher because no one's cleaning them out. And I don't know if you're going to get them to because it's additional burden and time that's kind of missing. So I would not push too hard on data resolution. It's okay to have it there, but if people had to put it in, they're going to be struggling because they don't really know when that skin rash cleared up when they're seeing the patient in primary care.
So, Clem, I totally agree with your comments. And again, I'm somebody as a physician who really, I love my problem lists. I spend my evenings and weekends cleaning and maintaining my problem lists. And it's true that that data, most of us understand these concepts, you know, that a problem gets diagnosed at a given point in time. It may be based on a lab test. It may be based on the second iteration of a lab test. It may be based on a pathology result or an imaging finding or just a clinical diagnosis. But most diagnoses are established at some point in time. And if you're going to figure out what the prevalence and incidence of a disease is, you need to know at what point that, or at least the prevalence, you need to know at what point in time this diagnosis was established. Similarly, many diagnoses do resolve at a given point in time. You take out the tumor, you know, or the patient gets over the condition, or something else happens. It's true that not every diagnosis or problem will have a discrete date of diagnosis or resolution, so these really pretty much would need to be entered using fuzzy date logic. At the data level that we've heard, I've heard from the major EHR vendors is something that they can manage. And as you say, I think this goes to the issue of, you know, is every data element in USCDI a requirement? You know, does every health IT system need to support it, or can it be supported only by those systems where it is relevant to what's going on, and then that if you have the data, then it should be available for exchange. So thank you for those comments, and I think that, you know, I tried to capture some of that in my submissions, but I think that if there's an opportunity to clarify any of that, please you know, let's get that captured in our spreadsheet for suggesting okay. Back to the
OMC. There's one more little tricky problem with resolution because, you know, people come with, you know this, all Steve, they come in with chest pain and then they decide it's angina and then they decide it's right coronary artery disease. And so those problems may all still live and there's not automatic ways to remove one or call it a resolution when it's not really resolved. It just morphed into a more specific problem. So I just want to highlight that it's hard. There's not any simple solution, but I would firmly support the date of first entered. We should be able to get something out of that.
Well, but I would argue, Clem, that date of entry and date of diagnosis is not the same thing. That I will often enter a diagnosis either as a problemless diagnosis or as an encounter diagnosis, and that it was actually diagnosed at some date in the past. So I think while many systems and use cases have had to settle for date of entry as a proxy for date of diagnosis, that was the exact reason why this was requested, was because that it's not, it's only a fair proxy.
No, I accept that. I just worry about, you know, I just had a meeting with some physicians who we practiced together for a long time, and they actually quit practice because they only had 10 minutes per patient. And, you know, but that's the problem. We got time is squished down. And, you know, you might spend your whole nights and weekends like it's something you do, Steve, you know, completing this, but it's not realistic. You know, we have to find stuff that can work. And I I agree with what you said about date of diagnosis, and the degree we can get it in, because that's an initial, someone's saying it, and there's a chance for them to do something then. It's the resolution that's more tricky. Not wrong having it in there, but if we make physicians do one more thing, they're going to be going off over the wall.
Yep. And Hans, you made a good point that date of diagnosis is intended to be when a clinician established the diagnosis, as opposed to date of onset, which could typically be something that's determined by the patient, right? You know, I started having this chest pain 3 weeks ago, you know, then I came in and, you know, it was identified and diagnosed to be something. Again, the idea, oh, poor Les, we've overwhelmed Les. The idea here is simply to make these fields available in certified health IT systems so that for those situations where it is appropriate to enter them, that there's a place to do that, because today there is no place to put in a date of diagnosis or resolution.
And if I may, yeah, the terminology that was just got a little confusing because the date of diagnosis in the description of the proposals is to capture the date a patient first had the diagnosis. The way you described it is that it is the date that the patient was diagnosed by a clinician, which may not be the same as the date the patient first had that diagnosis effectively. So that's where I think the terminology needs to be a little bit more clear. Which one is it really? Because then it starts to sound a lot like the date of onset as well. So which one are we really talking about here? When you use the term date diagnosed, sounded more clear as to what the intent was. So that would be helpful to clarify that a little bit more. Is it the date diagnosed that the clinician observed that that's the diagnosis, or is it the estimated time of when that diagnosis probably started from an onset perspective? That was it went back and forth in the conversation.
Yeah, it's a good point. Again, my intent and what I was trying to channel for the public health team that was requesting this was that it was the date that it was diagnosed by a clinician. Les, do you want to jump in?
I was just going to say that, as you can see, we're working through the use case of a physician maintaining a problem list when he's getting updates to that problem list from other physicians or healthcare providers caring for the patient, which is a high priority use case, but it gets to be pretty complicated when you look at how the data that you're generating from this use case would impact the patient using the list. Now, now the detail that you have there that you need for managing your problem list probably confuses the hell out of the person who is trying to figure out what's going on with their health.
That's I think a really good point. Yes, conflicting use cases or use cases that potentially have different needs. Other thoughts about the problems?
Yes, I'd like to jump in.
Grace, go ahead, Grace.
My concerns from the patient and care partner perspective on date of resolution. When you're looking at something more acute, often you would need a patient-reported outcome or going by the word of what the patient says, the rash resolved itself on X day. In the context, I don't see broad applicability in the context of using date of resolution and prioritizing it in the context of chronic illness, life-altering, life-limiting conditions and diagnoses, rare disease, disability. There is no resolution. This is a lifelong condition. What jumps out at me with this situation is that if this is documented, where it would maybe have a significant impact is on a patient filing for disability benefits, where a date of resolution would perhaps mean a transition to functionality and no longer qualifying for benefits.
Good point. Can I, before I bring you on, Hans, I just wanted to ask Al to jump in. Al has been central to these items, making it into draft V2, and I know has opinions about their utility. You wanna comment, Al?
Yeah, first of all, I'll say this. I think I've said this before in various venues. I think our ONC's definition of date of diagnosis is not good. I'm going to say that. Okay. I think that from as a provider, the date of diagnosis is when any provider who's credentialed to make a diagnosis makes the diagnosis. So first diagnosis, and the diagnosis is something that comes from a provider. So I think that a better definition is the date at which the diagnosis was determined by, just determined, whether it's by a provider or maybe a patient self-diagnosis or whatever. But it is when the diagnosis is first established. And to the extent that you can determine a date of resolution, the date of resolution is when it's no longer an issue or it's no longer a problem. And sometimes it's not solved. And so it's a chronic condition. And so there is no date of resolution on a chronic condition. And that's fine. But when there is something that is resolved, whether it's a disability or a diagnosis or a condition, then that's whenever that, it could be an approximate date, but there should be a date that we're able to say, this is no longer a problem. So my suggestion, as I said before, is a recommendation around a better definition of diagnosis. We're working on, improving those diagnoses, and a lot of the data elements definitions need to be improved. And we're working on that, and that's one of the things that we will do over the course of the next couple months is work through those.
Okay. I don't see hands up. We other comments on the problems data class and the two proposed data elements? Does anybody feel that these should be removed specifically from draft V2, not presupposing that would make space to add other things in, but just independently, does anybody think these are a bad idea?
Well, when I see lists with 55 problems, who the heck is going to make these assertions? You know, so I'd be half inclined to either remove or down or declare that they recognize that this won't be filled in a lot, because there's going to end up being a requirement as it evolves, and people will just stuff something in to get it to shut down. So I really continue to worry about data resolution for all those different reasons.
Yeah, and I think it's a really good point. And I think the discussion earlier about how we manage or don't manage the problem list is important, because there's clearly, as you suggested earlier, there's a date something is added to the problem list. There may be a date that it's modified on the problem list. There may be a date that it's resolved from or deleted from the problem list. None of those, I believe, should be confused with the date of resolution, which is really not about the problem list so much as it's about the problem. Yeah. And I think that's what we're trying to get at here is creating these fields that have never really existed before. All we've had is date of entry, date of resolution, or deletion, because there are situations, you know, as in the case of, you know, reporting to a Parkinson's disease registry, that where it really does matter when a diagnosis was established. And I like, Al, your comment that we may be looking to advance or refine the definition so that it's not simply an appropriately licensed clinician that made the diagnosis, but that there are going to be some diagnoses that can be made, you know, by an individual, right?
The definition you're making will require a review of the chart, which isn't always available, or all the charts aren't available. So I think it's really hard. And that's why the problem lists are messy. And just by declaring it, it's not going to make it easy or feasible. So I'd be okay with this, but with some caveats, recognizing this isn't easy, like rolling out of bed. This is going to require, if we really do it right, it's going to require substantial investment, more physician time, more personnel time, and better records. And I don't think we're going to get there very quickly.
Thank you, Clem.
And what if
it
I
is
disagree?
Time for public Less,
of course,
less,
I never disagree with Clem, but I mean, what if I disagree on the diagnosis that Clem came up with? That the if I'm a provider and I don't even, you know, I don't want to see that, you know, from my records incorporated in my records, or, you know, redact, I need to redact it from it, or I want to comment that, you know.
Right, right.
I mean, yeah. this is pretty complicated when you think about the health information exchange between providers based on these entities. You can always say this was in my records at this time, and that's fair enough. Maybe that'd be, but then if it comes and is forced into my records on a problem list, I don't know what I'm going to say about it.
Thank you, Les. We're going to hold there, and we're going to go to public comment.
All right. Thank you, Stephen. Operator, could we please open up the public comment line?
Yes. If you would like to make a comment, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad. A confirmation tone will indicate your line is in the queue. You may press star 2 to remove your line from the queue. And for participants using speaker equipment, it may be necessary to pick up your handset before pressing the star key. One moment while we pull for comments. There are no comments at this time.
Okay, thank you so much. And again, for those of you who are members of the public who've joined us today, we do want to encourage you to feel free to put voice to your comments and or enter them in the public chat. Dan Vreeman, your hand has been up for a little bit.
Thanks, Stephen. Building on what Clem said, I think it might be helpful to suggest a principled way that we can signal for a given data element that it is not meant to imply that it's required in all instances, meaning we want to declare support for it. We want systems to be able to exchange it when they have it. But this idea that having it listed there means that always and every time it must be populated, I think, is a common challenge, and we probably don't want to go there for all of these. So we might, as a group, think about how we might signal such a requirement.
I think you're spot on there, Dan. And again, it goes back to really one of the very first comments that was made, and I think we have it captured in row 4 of our spreadsheet, that Hans raised it initially, but others have mentioned this, that clarification that not all systems, whether or not all systems must support every data element, but then you're right, this is a slightly different issue, which is to say if a data element is supported, is it required to be populated? And I think the answer just intuitively is no. You know, I always think about the pediatric head circumference. You know, I'm not going to populate a pediatric head circumference on an elderly person in a long-term care facility. It's just not going to happen. You know, we already know that not all elements can or should be populated in every situation. So that brings us to the end of our time together. Thank you, everyone, again, for your participation. The homework is going to be similar to last week. Leslie had to leave us, but she, as the new co-chair, will hopefully join us shortly in a debrief, and we will send out a more formalized homework assignment. But we really do want to collect your feedback on these issues that we've discussed, specifically related to the new data classes and elements that have been proposed for version 2. I think we will revisit these again next time, and then hopefully be able to move on to our task 1C, looking at level 2 data classes and elements that were not included in draft V2, and that will, I'm sure, lead to some more lively discussion. So thank you all for your participation, and we will see you next week.
Thank you, Stephen.
Thank you. Bye.